book of Mark, if you would. Do I have this on right, brother? Back there? All right, good. We're looking forward to the week, and each service we'll do a little bit more music, all right? And so tonight we'll do another song, and then Monday we'll do another song. We'll add to the number, you know what I mean? And so we'll do that this week. I have recently just, instead of, let me put it this way, I'm not a pastor, so there are some things that I don't have to do. So what do you mean by that? Well, I'm just going to preach this message, and if it goes really quickly, it's just going to go really quickly. All right? Pastors have to hit like certain targets so that, you know, so that when you have biscuits in the oven at home or whatever, you can time them correctly and all that type of stuff. So pastor has to be a whole lot more consistent than I do. All right? But friends, here this morning, I want to share this with you. This, I was up late last night, not in a bad way, but just so excited to share this message with you. Mark chapter number 8. Mark chapter number 8. I don't know, I might have said 6, but it's Mark chapter number 8. And that's pretty cool how you have the Bible verses on the screen. Is that something that we could do maybe starting tonight or something if I talk with you? Is that something we can... Okay. That's pretty cool. I like that. That's a nice thing. Mark chapter number 8. So when Jesus heals, we're going to look at one of his miracles here. And what sets this apart is that Jesus didn't heal him all the way until he touched him a second time. Now, most of the time, all the time, we come across Jesus doing a miracle in Scripture. He didn't like heal the lame man halfway and then heal him again, right? No, he just heals him and he jumps up and there he is. He didn't make Lazarus half alive, whatever that is. Right? I mean, we see this over and over again. Jesus would do a miracle and that was it. I mean, boom, the miracle's done. There it is. But in Mark chapter 8, verse 22, this is an interesting account because he doesn't heal him all the way at first. Look at verse 22. And he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught. Do you see anything? He's saying. Verse 24. And he looked up and said, I see men as trees walking. Verse 25. After that, he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up, and he was restored and saw every man clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, neither go into the town nor tell it to any in the town. I call this the second touch of Jesus. The second touch of Jesus. Dear Lord, I pray you'd help us this morning. Fill me with your Spirit. This is all about you. And Lord, I pray whether there's someone here in this room or watching online or watching the playback from the recording. Who knows, Lord, this might be even be heard, being heard months or even years after I've preached it. But Lord, I pray that you would use this to draw someone to you. In your name I pray, amen. I want to answer this question, why didn't he heal him all the way at first? But I want to point out to you some character qualities here, and then we'll be done. Number one, Jesus is unique. Jesus is unique. Look at what he says. And he cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. In other words, the people brought the man to the only person who could help him. You see, when we help people, I hope you have a desire inside you to help others. I hope you have that desire to bring other people to Jesus. When we bring other people to Jesus, that's exactly what we're doing. We cannot help people. I mean, understand, we can give people food. We can give people money. We can help them get on their feet, things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. You have no power to help someone's soul. I have no power to help someone's eternal soul. Listen, that is something only Jesus can heal. And friends, that's really, really important. And that ought to be liberating for any of us who want to help people. I can't help you, but I can bring you to somebody who can. That is our mentality. That ought to be our mentality. That's what the people's mentality was. They wanted to bring their friend. They wanted to bring this man to the man who could help him. When we help people, we need to remember that we can bring them to Jesus, but we cannot be Jesus. I think that there are people today, even churches today, that are overburdened and are burning out because they are actually, without realizing it, taking on the responsibility of Jesus. I can't heal anybody. I can't drag anyone to heaven with me. I can't reach inside the life of the addict. I cannot reach inside the broken heart of the lonely and fulfill that need. But Jesus can. He's unique. He's the only one that can. And listen, friends, that ought to take a load off of our backs because we don't have to do Jesus' job. We just have to make the introduction. Jesus is unique. Are you trying to help someone? Or maybe some of us have the personality where it makes us feel important if someone becomes dependent on us. We've all seen this in whether it's popular culture or hopefully you haven't seen this in real life, but you probably have, the idea of the mother who hangs on too long. We call it not cutting the apron strings. Some people call them helicopter parents. Right? Well, Johnny just, he couldn't finish his homework because of this and this, and Johnny's 18 years old. Right? It's time to cut the apron strings, you know what I mean? That helicopter parent, right? Because in some cases, unfortunately, I've seen marriages where the marriage was built on the children rather than with each other. And when that child's getting older and eventually moves out, the marriage falls apart because the mother in particular, can be a dad too, but particularly the mother feels like she's not needed anymore. And so she wants that child to be dependent on her so that she feels needed. Listen, we ought to be good parents. That's not the point. What I'm trying to say is that idea of trying to develop dependency on us actually short circuits and short changes the person we're trying to help. I don't want my kids to ultimately to be dependent on me. I want them to be dependent on Jesus. We don't want our church people to be dependent on the pastor, as nice as he is. His goal and our goal ought to be to help people be dependent on Jesus because he's the only one with the resources. He's unique. The second thing I think about Jesus being unique is you cannot expect anyone or anything else to do for you what only he can do. By the way, that includes a spouse. Now, I'm thankful for marriage. I miss my wife. I really do. I was texting with her last night, and I don't know why texting is different than talking on the phone. I don't know why. We talk on the phone too, because that she likes that more, right? Talk back and forth. I like texting. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I'm a guy. I don't know. She'll send me like a paragraph like that long, and I'll send like a smiley face, right? But lest you think it's disinterest, it's not. We have all these different emojis to choose from, so I will be choosing just the right emoji to send back. And my current emoji, the emoji of the last 2 days, and my daughter knows this too because it was group chat too. I have a separate chat, one with my wife and then one with the whole family. And my emoji for the last 2 days was, right? My wife said, oh, this piece of bad news. I was like, you know? Elena wanted to go to Sheetz last night. I'm like, right? We did, by the way. We love Sheetz. Okay. Oh man. Marriage is a wonderful thing. But there are certain needs that I should not be looking to my wife to or for. Why? Because she cannot be the spiritual energy. The spiritual comfort. Right? You follow what I'm saying? We can't look to people for what only Jesus can provide. People will fail us. My wife is wonderful. but she's not perfect. She doesn't have unlimited resources. What about a friend? Some people, boy, they just got to be on the phone with that friend or texting with that friend or whatever. It's not wrong to have good friends, but is that where you're getting your source of encouragement? Is that where you're drawing your strength? Because if you are a friend, ultimately you're going to be disappointed because only Jesus can fulfill that role in your life. Sibling, church. A church cannot provide what only Jesus can. Church doesn't provide salvation. The Catholic Church thinks they do, but friends, they're wrong. Salvation is only found in Jesus. Work. I wrote these down at the last moment. I wrote them down this morning, actually. I was like, oh, you know what? I think there's a temptation among some of us to let good books be a substitute for Jesus. Now listen, I'm a reader, okay? I love good books. I just bought one yesterday. I shouldn't have. You know, but I love good books, and we live in such a wonderful era where you can, instead of having to take your shelf around with you, you can put them all on here, right? You can just have hundreds, thousands of books, and it's wonderful, it's great. But guess what? That doesn't take the place of Jesus. And listen, it doesn't matter, I see it more with ladies, but we men have our own issues, etc., okay? But whether you're a man or a woman, if we're going to someone's creative journal for thoughts about Jesus instead of going directly to Jesus, then we're in trouble. Now, it's not saying that there's not good books out there that you can read, but listen, don't let it take that special place that only Jesus can fill. He's unique. Speakers, that would be my tendency. I do read a lot. My tendency would be to find a favorite preacher that I like to hear. And be like, oh man, that's the word of the Lord to me today. Listen, that preacher doesn't hold a candle to Jesus. I don't care if I was listening to Spurgeon preach live, which I would have loved to do. Right? George Whitfield, I would have loved to have heard him. They say he could preach to thousands without microphone. Wow. Nothing like Jesus. He's unique. Our family, we're currently watching a show, and I don't want to offend anybody. If you don't have a television in your house or whatever, that's fine. It's between you and God. That's okay. You know, you do what the Lord tells you to do. But we're watching a show that aired years ago, and it's a show about two brothers, one who is an FBI agent and one who is a college math professor, genius guy. And the brother, the genius guy named Charlie, helps his FBI brothers solve crimes, right? And it's a pretty clean show. Every once in a while there's something in there and we skip past it or whatever, etc. So please understand that caveat, okay? But I was thinking about this last night. The actor who plays the genius is not really a genius. You follow what I'm saying? I guess... find it interesting to meet the actor who plays that role, but I really wouldn't be meeting the actual guy because he's not real. Here's a better one, probably. The Chosen. I saw your advertisement or your slide. I said slide. Wow. Happy 1992. I saw that on your PowerPoint, you know, that was going through The Chosen. We're only halfway through season one, so no spoilers. I think that's kind of funny, right, because you can just... this tells you how it goes. But we love it and we want to watch it all together and everything. I think it'd be cool to meet the actor who plays Jesus. He does a very good job from what we've already seen, and it only gets better is what I've heard. But Jonathan Rumi is his name. He isn't Jesus. Right? I mean, we know that, etc. There's not going to be any magic power if I were ever to meet him. He's just a man, just like you and me. But Jesus is not. Jesus is unique. Number two, I want you to see Jesus is personal. Jesus is personal. It says he took him by the hand. You see that? Verse 23, and he took the blind man by the hand. This is a personal touch. Personal touch. This is actually intimate, not in a weird way. It's just There's something special about holding someone's hand. Now, that can be a husband and wife or a boyfriend, girlfriend. You know, that can be a mother and a child. It can be a father and son even. It could be siblings, etc. Unfortunately, in our world, so many things are perverted, etc., that sometimes when we see something like this, weird thoughts cross our minds because of the culture in which we live. There's nothing strange about this, but it was very personal. I was at Northland Baptist Bible College, and it was after an opening service, and I was on staff at the time, stayed on a couple years after graduation, and my wife and I, we were in our second year of marriage, and I was sitting in the front row, and my wife was sitting right to my left, and after the immediately to my left, I should probably say, because right to my left is kind of weird. Anyway, okay, so the speaker's done speaking. I want to go up and talk to him, right? So as I get up, there's crowds of people everywhere, 1,000 people in that gymnatorium. And I stood up and I grabbed my wife's hand and she didn't want to go. So I kind of tugged a little bit. You know, us, we can do that. It's not a mean thing. So I'm like, come on, we need to go. And she whipped her hand out of my hand. And I was a little bit, you know, what's going on here? So I turned around and looked and it wasn't my wife. In fact, it was a student, a girl student, who had some special needs, etc. So she had really no tact, and she started hollering at me, "Why are you holding my hand?" And my wife, who had somehow rolled around to my right side, she was standing over here, and I turned back with a shocked face. Now, that would have been my emoji, but they hadn't been invented yet. Okay, it's probably just colon. Parentheses, right? Still at that point, I turned around and then I looked over here and my wife, whoa, that's pretty much what it was like. A lot of static. No. She started laughing. The president of the college had seen what had happened, and Dr. Les Ola, and he was standing there laughing, etc. And why was it funny? Well, a number of reasons. But why did she react so strongly? Well, that holding someone's hand, that's very personal. Of course, I didn't do it on purpose. But that's very personal. Jesus here is personal. Listen, it doesn't matter what needs you have. Jesus knows about it, and it's personal to Him. How close is your connection to Jesus lately? Excuse me. That holding someone's hand implies a close connection. Have you ever been very close to Jesus? You know, we live in churchianity. It's possible even to be saved and yet not really walk with Jesus. Listen, friend, I can't walk with Jesus for you. You know, I got 2 of my 4 kids here with me here today. And I want to be the best daddy that I can be. It's kind of weird thinking that there's fewer days ahead of me being daddy as far as having them in the home than there are behind me. This one right here, this young lady right here is a senior. She's going to be done soon. And we tease her about going out and getting married. She doesn't have to just go out and get married, okay? We just tease her about that. But I mean, realistically speaking, those days are coming to an end. But I'll tell you what, I want all 4 of my kids to be close with Jesus. How about you, friend? Has there ever been the time in your life when you were closer to Jesus than you are today? If there is, I can guarantee you it is not because Jesus has moved. It's not because Jesus said, well, you know, I've had enough. It's not because Jesus, was like that girl where it's like, why are you holding my hand? Jesus isn't like that. Jesus is personal. And He wants you to get to know Him in that close, personal, intimate connection. That only happens through time. Well, Jesus really isn't interested in me. That's just something preachers say. Jesus really, I can't see Him. He doesn't have skin on. You know, little girl at night. Her mother was trying to comfort her. She was scared. Well, Jesus is here. I know, Mom, but I really would like someone with skin on. Sometimes it feels that way. I can't see him. I can't see him. Neither could this blind man, right? Now, he could physically feel Jesus. Listen, friends, Jesus is there, and he's personally interested in you. Remember a short man by the name of Zacchaeus? You say, well, there's a whole message there. Jesus loves short people too. No. We tease our daughter too, Elena, because she's shorter than the rest. I'm just giving you a hard time, okay? But I love this. I saw this somewhere. I don't know who wrote it, but I've always remembered it. And that is, do you realize that God planted that tree that Zacchaeus climbed up into decades before Zacchaeus needed it? Why? Jesus said, I'm going to your house today. I'm going to your house today. He wanted a personal relationship with Zacchaeus, right? Listen, he wants a personal relationship with you. So, well, I'm already saved. How personal has the relationship been since then? If I met my wife at the altar and we exchanged our I do's, and then I said, okay, I'll see you for our anniversary, well, it'd be my fault that we didn't have a very good relationship. Jesus is personal. I also want you to see real quickly, he said, don't tell anyone yet. You see that? Don't tell anyone yet. That's because it wasn't Jesus' time yet to be revealed. That would come a few months later. This was before Jesus was supposed to be revealed. He did this for this man individually. Did you see? He took him out of the town. In fact, let's look at that next. Not only is Jesus unique, not only is Jesus personal, number three, Jesus is trustworthy. Jesus is trustworthy. You see that? He took the blind man by the hand, and next, what did he do? And led him out of the town. When I was in college, I tried an experiment for a day. And that is, I wanted to feel what it was like to be blind. And so I worked it out with my roommates. They knew I was called to preach and that I was working on a sermon illustration. I would not do this again. Okay, but it was during college. You know, you do strange things when you're in college, okay? So I worked it out with some of my teachers even. I didn't make it the whole day, okay? So it was just a few classes. But I had a blindfold the whole nine yards, and I tried to make it through a day being blind. And I had to cheat a couple times, you know, so I didn't fall to my death. Okay, I was at Maranatha at the time. That's before I transferred. And they have a four-story building, a basement and three stories with stairs and different things. And there were some times when I had to cheat a little bit because I thought I was going to fall or someone was playing a trick on me, right? But then I started realizing this is what someone with no sight has to deal with all the time. They don't know. They can't see if someone's going to play a trick on them. They can't see if something bad's coming. They have to adjust to these things. They have to have a lot of trust in somebody who's going to lead them around. Listen, what is Jesus doing here? Jesus is gaining this man's trust. Everybody else brought him to Jesus. Now Jesus took him by the hand and said, hey, follow me. Walk with me. You know what, friend? He's going to do the same thing in your life. He's going to say, listen, you can't see where you're going, but I do. Walk with me. Oh, step around that. We got a stair coming. Look out. There's a ditch there. There's a hole there. Follow me. That's what our Christian life sometimes is. It seems dark, and it seems lonely, and it seems confusing, and we don't know the end. We can't see around the corner. It's kind of like we're blind, and Jesus is leading us. He's taking us by the hand, and he's saying, listen, just trust me. Just keep walking. Have others let you down? Have others proved untrue? I love that song. Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens. Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts help of the helpless, oh, abide with me. Sometimes we just need to keep walking because it helps us learn to trust Him more. So here we go. We come to the second touch. Why did Jesus touch his eyes a second time? Say, well, we haven't dealt with the first time. This was difficult. I'm searching commentaries. I'm thinking. We're at Sheets. They're waiting for the order. I'm in the car. Why is this different? I'm praying, Lord, show me. Why is this different? Jesus didn't heal his sight all at once, right? I see men as trees. There's a hint there. One man thought that the first touch healed the physical aspect and the second touch heals, you know, the brain part that connects, you know, and all this. And that's a fascinating thought. But here's the truth. I've concluded that since the Bible doesn't explicitly tell us why he did it this way, we can't say for sure. Well, Brother Ben, you led us on a wild goose chase. No. Here's the truth. It must have been something individually specific that man needed. You follow? We know this. If he sees men as trees, what is that? Well, it's kind of foggy, right? They look like trees, but they're moving, so I know they're not trees. Well, how would he know what trees look like? See, I believe based on that clue that this man had some form of sight prior. Maybe he was born and it was kind of fuzzy. We know of children that have been born that way where they have a little bit of sight, but they can't really distinguish. And so sometimes through surgery or through AIDS or whatever that is, we know that happens with babies who can't hear very well. And I love watching those YouTube videos where you see a baby hear or a child hear their mother's voice for the first time, you know. Or people who are colorblind and they give them those glasses. You've seen those videos, right? I'll stay up all night and watch those things. You know, and they start crying like, oh, wow, I never noticed there was color. I didn't know the trees are green. Oh, right. But what we do know is that at some point in his life, this man had some form of sight, and it was taken away from him. I can't imagine how painful that must have been. To know that your sight is leaving you, I can't imagine how painful it has been for the Hamilton family to see Patch the Pirate, Ron Hamilton, fading. They are friends, so I get to see a little bit, but I don't feel that in my heart like their family does. I just did a podcast interview that'll come out next month with Jason Hamilton. And we talked a little bit. You know, that wasn't the topic of the podcast, but that to fade. This man's sight faded. This brings me to the final observation, and we'll be done. Jesus is specific. Jesus is specific. Because isn't this the best part? In other words, when Jesus heals this man, he doesn't just heal him right there in the town like he does with other people. He takes him by the hand. And then he leads him out of town. Number one, trusting, right? Building trustworthiness or showing him he's trustworthy. He heals him some, and then he says, yeah, I can start seeing, and then he heals him again. I don't know what Jesus is doing here, but I do know this. It was specific to this man. And listen, when Jesus meets your needs, when Jesus steps in to your life to heal you of whatever it is, it will be specific to you. So it doesn't matter what hurts you've gone through, Jesus knows. It doesn't matter what kind of past you have. Jesus knows. And his healing of you and his restoration of you is going to be specifically tailored to you. We've all heard the testimonies of someone, perhaps before they were saved, they were drunkards and they got saved, and it's like overnight a switch goes, right? And they never touch a drop of alcohol again. We also know other people who've been saved a long time, and they wrestle with drunkenness for a really long time before they finally have victory. See, no two people are exactly the same. But Jesus is the same, and he knows what you need. I don't, but he does. And if you'll yield to him and just trust him, he will heal you, and he will restore you, and he will give you a future. See, this man had a terrible past one way or another. And his prospects of the future were, no pun intended, very dim. But when Jesus heals him, what happens? He transformed his future. Because now he can see. And by the way, Can you imagine Jesus giving anyone anything less than perfect vision? I watched one of these Jesus movies a long time ago. Not the Jesus movie, but one of these ones that... It continued with the apostles. And Peter healed somebody, and they showed it as though the guy like barely recovered, and then it took him a few more months to really get on his feet. I'm like, that's not the way the Lord heals. You know what I mean? It's complete. That's why this story is unique. But it's right there. And Jesus heals him. He's got perfect vision. He also has a testimony. Now, he can't share it yet. But after Jesus is crucified and rises again, you better believe that man had a testimony he could share with others. Oh, I know Jesus. I was blind. I was lost. But now I can see. The Amazing Grace story before Amazing Grace was even written. Jesus took a person who was broken and not only fixed him, but gave him more than he had in the beginning. You know, friends, the second touch of Jesus is special because it embodies Jesus' care for this man and his unique personal life story. Jesus will do the same for you. He is trustworthy. No one else will or even can, but He will do it for you. He is personal. He is trustworthy. He is unique. Will you be brave enough to ask for His help? I really believe that in a group this size, especially we got people watching online, etc., there are people in the sound of my voice that need a touch from Jesus. You need healing in some way. Oh, no one has the gift of healing these days. I understand that. And God still does miracles and can heal people physically, but I'm talking much more than that. I'm talking about in that realm that no one else sees, the spiritual realm, the inner realm, the mind, the soul, the spirit. Listen, friend, Jesus can meet every need you have and more. But you have to follow Him. He says, here, take my hand, I'll lead you. You have to follow Him and Him alone. I'd like every head bowed, every eye closed this morning. Do you have the song, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus? Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect to the story, but it's also perfect for the message. Friend, this morning, do you need to turn your eyes upon Jesus? Well, I'm already saved, Brother Ben. That's a good thing. How's that relationship? How's that relationship between you and the Lord? Is there a broken part of your life? Has your heart been broken? Has your mind been broken? Is there something? Is there a sore spot in your soul? Listen, the church can't fix it. A psychiatrist can't fix it. A pastor or a preacher, evangelist, can't fix it. But Jesus can. All you have to do is be brave enough to say, okay, I'll trust you. I'll trust you. I may not know where we're going. I can't see the future. But I'll just trust you. What I'd like to do this morning, I'm going to pray and I'm going to have the piano play. I don't know what you're normally accustomed to on a Sunday morning. I'm actually not going to have us sing this morning, but friend, if you need to spend a little time with the Lord, let me encourage you. We won't have people looking around or anything like that. Would you? We'll stand to our feet in a moment, but you can sit back down or you can come forward and kneel, whatever the Lord leads you to do. But don't delay. Just talk to the Lord. Lord, I need you. And I don't understand, but I'm going to trust you. Dear Lord, I thank you for the truth of your word. I thank you for this unique account. Thank you that you are the healer. You do what no one else can do. Lord, I ask that you would do so this morning.